Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. Okay, in context to a lot of conversations I've been in the past few weeks, and in context to the voting this next Tuesday, I've been engaged in a plethora of conversations regarding the national election. This is because so many people recognize our dire situation as a nation and fail to see this in context to a republic. Remember that the general government was only delegated limited and defined powers within the Constitution. If everyone could change their paradigm to recognize that what the national government is doing is violating the Constitution and that the Republic has the power to stop this insanity. I've gone through several citations in previous shows, and in my inaugural address, I talked about this. These citations have come from the Federalist Papers, and I've also began reading citations from Madison in the Virginia ratification debates. And each of these citations provides evidence that the entity that has the authority to stop all constitutional violations committed by the federal government, or what I like to refer to as the general government, is the republic. And that entity within the republic really comes from our state legislatures. How or what do I mean that the republic possesses the power and authority? This is very important, so please write this down for future reference. And I'm not going to yell this. The Constitution is a contract. It's that simple. The Constitution was not a marriage license enslaving the states to the general government. It was an established framework for the general government to operate within. And within this framework, the states delegated limited and defined powers. That's it. Limited and defined powers. If one would just go read Madison's 1817 veto that I refer to as the bonus bill, I believe it was the infrastructure services bill, something like that. And I'll actually be reading that on air soon. If you go read this, you'll get a jump on this context for yourself and the content that's within this admonishment from Madison to Congress. The greatest step that we, the Republic, have to make is getting the citizens to understand that it is the Republic that is in charge and not our newly elected monarch and the political hacks operating in D.C. That's why there's so many people in a fever and, you know, in such a buzz about what's going on in D.C. And I'll give you my honest opinion. It really doesn't matter who's going to become our next monarch if the states don't start exercising their authority over this Constitution, it's done. If we don't start waking up and getting our state legislatures active and involved, they're going to spend us into oblivion. The course is set. We're going to capitulate one way or the other. That's either through political pressures with foreign nations. That's either financially. There's so many different possibilities of us capitulating and basically having the federal government say, well, we really failed, so we're going to have to throw this Constitution out because it's the one thing that's inhibiting us from doing the things we really need to do. And don't be surprised if a part of their solution is becoming a part of the amalgamation or the mixture of a global governance. And you've probably heard plenty of people talk about the New World Order and those types of things. And again, the old C word always comes up, conspiracy. But let me get back to context on nationalism, because really that's the rant I want to, you know, focus on here. Our presidents do not have the constitutional authority to ram agendas down our throat. And that is precisely what they've been doing for years. And it's time to stop this tyranny. In doing this, we have to recognize that nationalism is the incorrect paradigm, as I've been telling all who will listen. And I think back on some really good arguments that have been made over the history of this republic. One of those is Teddy Roosevelt's anti-American or the hyphenated American. And if one thinks in context to what he was saying, American, he was basically boiling away the states and identifying that we were a national government. Now, in context of what he was saying about the hyphenated American, whether that be the Irish American, African, Mexican, you fill in the blank, hyphenated American, he's correct, because people clinging to another heritage or another national ethnicity or what have you, they are basically marginalizing their responsibility as a citizen to this republic. Anyway, nationalism is diametrically opposed to little r republicanism. Like the last show's explanation of the centripetal political energies, the nationalist paradigm is centralizing powers in context to a person who places their emphasis on the national stage. In doing this, they lose sight of the republic and little r republicanism. Thus, centripetal political energies are destructive because they are at the expense of the republic, or those who are in the hinterland of the republic, the states, the counties, and so forth. In other words, when one places all hope in the national government, one is surrendering their sovereignty and their state's sovereignty to the national government for the federation. Remember, this polity, this federal government, is limited and defined and has never constitutionally been delegated the powers to do over 80% of the things it is doing today. These powers have been usurped because they've bypassed the Article 5 process and simply assumed it, saying that they can do it because of these mystical clauses that I've talked about in previous shows. As an aside or tangent, I'm going to go on real quick here. Why do we not pay direct tax to the UN? Well, this is because the UN is not a legitimate government established by we the people. In context of taxation, then why do we pay taxes and allow our general government to spend money on roles, responsibilities, and powers that have not been delegated to them through the Article 5 process? There has to be a fight, and if we are going to fight and take this republic back, this fight is not going to be in D.C. This fight is going to be at the state capitals with our legislatures. The fight has to be on the political battlefield, where we can awaken those with the authority and power over the general government, and that is the states, individually and collectively. Let me try to change your frame of reference in context to political battlefields. Political battlefields are places where we fight our politicians who are supposed to represent us. Our local legislatures in our capitals are those who are empowered to protect us from federal tyranny. I've said this several times, and I just want to clarify that. Bottom line, there are three battlefields where we can spend our finite resources on. And it seems like we're wasting a lot of our finite resources on the national battlefield. The first battlefield is the local battlefield. The next is the state battlefield. And the last is the former that I mentioned, the national battlefield. The local battlefield is where we are the most affected by government. I'm going to take another aside or a tangent here. Has anyone noticed that the federal government is showing up in our local battlefield? This should alarm everyone that they're not supposed to be here in our communities, and yet they're growing in their presence, such as dictating what type of products we can buy, or the EPA dictating how we can use our land. Let me get back to the local battlefield, which is what we should be really concerned with. And again, it affects most of our lives. One of those primary things that affects most of our lives is traffic. our government has a responsibility to allow us to be as productive as we possibly can. The more productive we can be, the more revenues that we can generate for them. And so it just befuddles me to think that we have the liberals over on the western side of the state of Washington and liberals in all sorts of other states that actually want to hamper productivity and throttle down traffic so that you have to suffer and you have to spend so much of your time in gridlock. This is not their job. Their job is to protect life and property. Those are the two objects that Madison talks about. And if I really wanted to go into this and the details on traffic, and just traffic alone, this would be a separate show. Another factor that would be on the political battlefield would be employment or job opportunities and the regulations at a local level. Services would be another one. In some context, or I should say in some applications, some cities are actually creating, I will say, issues that we should be battling over that, I mean, they shouldn't even be addressed. And these cities are outright violating the Constitution. So let me put some context to this. Any city that decides to be a sanctuary city is violating the Constitution and the powers that were legitimately delegated to the general government. And so anybody that is doing that, and if it's a city government doing that, and these people are raising their arm to the square, they're violating their oath because their oath states that they will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And yet they're undermining it by creating sanctuary cities. Another example is the homestead for unconstitutional refugees. Now, on the fact of refugees, and let's just pretend that the Constitution allows the federal government to bring in a block of immigrants into the United States, bypassing the entire immigration process. Let's just say that that's in the Constitution, or they've amended the Constitution to do it because it's not in the Constitution. But let's just say it is. There is a thing called the uniformity clause that requires that the federal government be uniform in how it sends out these taxes or burdens. And so in the uniformity clause, all states must suffer equally, and it's dependent upon the states to determine where they're going to suffer, not the federal government to cherry pick. We're dropping them here, we're dropping them here, and we're dropping them here, and you don't have a choice on that. That is tyranny. And in context to uniformity, why is it that some states aren't receiving any refugees? Bottom line, it's a violation of the Constitution. And any city that is jumping forward and saying, we want to be a refugee city, they're violating the Constitution as well. Again, the local battlefield is also what I'd like to refer to as the flashpoint for dealing with state oppression and the federal tyranny. This battlefield has some overlap with the state because of the services such as public utilities, infrastructure, and those types of things, because the state does have roads that go through cities. And the state does have a power grid that they're responsible for, and many of the public utilities they have oversight and so forth over. So there is a little overlap between the local battlefield and the state battlefield. With regard to the state battlefields, in a good liberal state, and I'm using the classical use of the word liberal here, not the secular progressive usage of liberal, any good liberal state uses our founding principles that individual sovereignty and individual liberty is foremost. In applying the centrifugal political energies, thus allowing the counties and cities the ability to engage in most all local matters possible, that would be a good liberal state government. Conversely, a socialistic state or an autocratic state that want to control all facets of the citizen's life, from whether they can cut down a tree on their property or to whether they can go to school or where they will go to school and what they will learn, that is a centripetal political energy state and a socialistic state. And those states should be abandoned by good citizens when they recognize that they're being oppressed. The state battlefield, again, is where we fight our representatives on how they and the general government's encroachments upon our liberties are occurring. Here's the epiphany, people. This is where we must fight against all violations of the Constitution by the general government. Remember, as Madison said, encroachments apply to all things that are not enumerated or listed in the Constitution. Therefore, the state is where we must deal with all things domestic in nature. For example, the domestic encroachments that are currently violating the Constitution that are being exercised by the general government are performed by the departments of Justice, Interior, Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, Health and Human Services, Housing and Urban Development, Transportation, Energy, Education, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security. Yes, even Veterans Affairs, because back when Washington was president, he wanted the ability to do more for the veterans, but it just wasn't in the Constitution. And he clearly stated that we owed it to the veterans, but they had their hands tied because the Constitution didn't delegate that power. If we want to do something more for the veterans, and we should amend the Constitution to allow the Department of Veterans to exist and to basically help those who have given either their ultimate or have sacrificed such a great sacrifice for this nation and for our liberties. With regard to the Interior, the Department of Interior, for example, all lands within the states are the states except for the lands that are congruent to what is in the Constitution. In other words, federal properties for military training, and one can go into, I believe it is in Article 1, that defines how those lands and properties were supposed to be divvied up. You know, such as ports of entry for foreign commerce and those types of things. But they're not supposed to have forests. They're not supposed to have national parks. The Constitution did not grant them this carte blanche capability to assume or take any land that they wanted to, or retain it, or take it away from the state when a state becomes a state. When a state becomes a state, all land is the state's, except for those things that are constitutionally defined. Anyway, the general government does not have the constitutional authority to hold and control state resources, our land, trees, and so forth. They can only control territory resources. Let me put this into context as to what is a nation. A nation is a state who enjoys its own sovereignty. Therefore, the 50 states, which are independent sovereign nations within this republic, are on the same foothold and level as China and Russia. Yeah, our governors are at that same level. We simply enjoy a delegated entity we refer to as our federal government to represent our collection of independent states for specific and defined purposes such as trade, foreign affairs, policies, etc. Remember, nationalism was rejected by the Republic as well as the Constitutional Convention. Under Madison's plan, the states were administrative bodies. Under the William Patterson's plan, or the New Jersey plan, there was a small federation, and the states were equal within marginal representation of the people. And the Roger Sherman and Oliver Ellsworth plan, or the Connecticut Compromise, created this bicameral Congress and basically delegated very limited powers to the federal government and reserved all powers to the states or the Confederacy. What concerns apply to the national battlefield? If we want to really take a battle up to D.C., it would be war or the legitimate and uniform taxation, immigration and foreign affairs and those types of things. But we're better off sticking on our state capitals and getting our legislatures to represent us, because they are far more, they represent millions of people, where we just represent ourselves. What are not applicable to the national battlefield, again, are all those departments I listed before, from the Justice to the Homeland Security. Who should be fighting on the national battlefield? It should be our senators in the Senate, in Congress, and it should be our representatives of the state legislatures and other state representatives, and even our sheriffs should be leading the battle to conserve our liberties and so forth, not conservative entertainers. This is a paradigm shift for many. It is about the contract and compliance to the contract. As long as we are focused and fighting the battle on the wrong battlefield, we will never win this battle and will continue to lose the battles and eventually the war. the Lord that a single battle does not lose a war, but we are running out of time, folks, because they have obfuscated the Constitution so far and it perverted it so much and subverted it and undermined it that today enough citizens actually believe what they're telling or what they're teaching in the education system. And they're soon at a precipice, or we are at the precipice, where they can soon discard it, and there's not enough people to stand up and go, you can't do that. And ergo, that's why it's critical to start working with our representatives and our leaders. We don't have time to try to win this cultural education. In the Bible days, it took Moses 40 years to change a culture. It would take us equally the same amount of time, and our framers had the same problem that faced them. They had to change a culture from moving from British rule to independence. And so what they did was they didn't have an election, and they didn't go around in classrooms and teach people. What they did was they applied true leadership principles, and as representatives, they started working together, recognizing the fact that they needed to create a resistance to the British tyranny. So without having a major vote or anything else, they started sending delegates and appointed a Continental Congress. And that Continental Congress started representing us, the little United States or the Confederacy, in basically standing up to the British tyranny and eventually revolting. And our Declaration of Independence and history was written from that point. It was from leadership of our representatives. And that's why our focus has to be on leadership. I talk about this very in depth in my first book, We the People, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway? The Constitutional Fix to a Constitutional Problem. And I also go into this in minute detail in my second book, We the People, The Strategy to Convene a Convention for Republic Review. Now, there's that other C word, convention. I don't want anybody to be alarmed. This is a convention where we're coming together, but there's no authority in writing or amending the Constitution. This is strictly an audit of the Constitution, and the convention isn't actually a coalescing in some secret place. This convention or this audit will occur from the state capitals online amongst the other states. There's no reason to give our legislatures some, you know, expensive boondoggle to go to Philadelphia or some other place when they can do their job and what they should have been doing all this time anyway in standing up to federal tyranny is auditing the Constitution. So in context, what we have to do is we have to apply the principles of what our framers had done. And that was literally by going into the representation and leadership and basically standing up to federal tyranny instead of going back to their constituents and say, hey, is it okay if the federal government starts invoking these types of powers that are a violation of our Bill of Rights that they had won and had acknowledged under the Glorious Revolution of, 1686, something like that. A Britishman and a subject of the British Crown had inalienable rights, and that's one of the reasons why the Declaration of Independence included those inalienable rights. And we always have inalienable rights endowed to us by our Creator. The progressives are trying to pervert that government is the one that would give us those rights. As you notice, I didn't have a break. I just wanted to make sure I could get through all of this, and I'm coming up on the hard break of actually ending this show. So we're going to actually go and cut to our sponsors. And I hope to rattle your cages a little bit more, and I hope you stay tuned and listen to these shows every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1. Thank you very much, and God bless. Folks, I know it seemed like I was cutting out, but actually, let me end the show on this. We have to stop surrendering our sovereignty as individuals and states in this republic. We only need to start the battle in one state, not all. Just like the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, this news will travel to all states from the one state calling for republic review, which is an audit to the Constitution. Remember, it is a contract, and inherent in all contracts is contract law, and it is the ability of the superior entity to audit the inferior entity. This means that states have the ability to audit the federal government. From now on, think of little r republicanism and the republic, and reject the ideas and the ideology of nationalism. They're not the solution. In the context of the secular progressives, we have to stop allowing them to control the narrative. We have to stop looking at DC as the legitimate base of power. Thank you very much, and God bless.